The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
I mentioned before Kali pose. If you go on Yoga Journal, which is the main source for yoga information in the United States, you'll find an article there that says that Kali pose, that goddess pose, as they call it, invokes Kali. They changed the name to goddess pose to make it more marketable. And in the article, it actually uses the term invoke Kali. Of course, most people don't know what Kali is. Even when I was doing the pose and they called it Kali pose, I didn't know who Kali was. But if you just Google her, you'll see a very fierce goddess with a necklace of severed human heads and a loincloth of severed human arms, triumphantly standing over a decapitated corpse that she's just topped off the head of.
It's the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that is my next guest, who will be joining me here in just a second. Alexander Frank is one of those. He was actually raised in a secular Jewish household and started looking for a more spiritual experience while serving as an officer in the army. And somebody introduced him to yoga, and he became a regular practitioner. He was actually a yogi, and you'll hear his story. And I thought today we could talk about yoga. You know, I saw, and look, this is a controversial issue. I always take arrows, whether I say yoga should not be practiced. You hear others say it's okay as long as you don't use the mantras. If you or somebody you know is into yoga, turn up the radio. All right, let's talk about it. You'll be able to ask your questions, and we can explore this practice and determine whether or not a follower of Christ, somebody who professes Christianity, should be engaged in an Eastern mysticism form of exercise, which is yoga. Is it contrary to our faith? Some argue that, yeah, it is. You know, Eastern mysticism, the basis for yogic exercise is contrary to our faith in the form of pantheism. The physical part of yoga, minus the mantras and the chants and the goddess and goddess and gods, oh, it's no problem. What's wrong with stretching? What's wrong with deep breathing, right? Slow breathing. There's nothing wrong with it. I remember talking to a priest who specialized in deliverance and also healing the family tree. He argued otherwise. He pointed out that there are many who now use yoga as an exercise, like aerobics, you know, main means to relieve tension, you know, remain limber. But he says, man, there are deep spiritual undertones that cannot be avoided by those who believe, and they will manifest. They will manifest. Yoga is one whole thing. It's one package, he says. You know, just like you're one package. And the split of exercise from their spiritual load, a lot of people want to do that. You really can't. You can't separate the rituals of Santeria from what they mean and say, for example. You know, have you ever thought of that? You know, doing rituals of Santeria without the spiritual components? You can't do that. Same thing with yoga, he says. A lot of people will say, well, come on. You know, I don't have any problem with it. You know, it's not a big issue for me. There was an article I saw the other day. It came from, I think it was Monsignor Rossetti. He has this thing called The Exorcist Diary, and it's number 282 in his diary. And he just chronicled in the piece that he wrote on what he called Kundalini disasters. And he says in the last few months, several people they've come to us because they were having spiritual problems and they sought their assistance. He's big into deliverance and to exorcism, spiritual warfare. And they had very ugly experiences in Kundalini yoga. They claim to have actually been attacked by evil spirits as a result of entering deeply into this spirituality. And they're experiencing all sorts of agitation. And I won't go through all that he wrote. He wrote a pretty long piece on it. But he cautions anybody that is involved in this to stay away. So let's talk about it right now. For Christians, the big question, is it compatible with our faith? And I'd love to hear from you. You know, you can join us anytime, 888-914-9149. I'm joined right now, as I said, by Alexander Frank. He was a yogi master. He went down this path. There were warning signs along the way. He eventually took heed of those. He ended up becoming Catholic a few years ago, and it's great to have him here with us. And look, this guy is an intelligent man. He's not prone to fancy. He's got a degree in physics from Duke, a law degree from Yale. He teaches at a Catholic classical school in Denver. So he's got some cred, and he joins me right now. Good to have you with me, Alex. Thank you for your time.
Good to be on the show. I'm happy to be on.
Yeah, you know, first of all, you know, we can, there's so many directions I could go on with this, but let me start with your story. You were a secular materialist when you were growing up, if I remember your story correctly. Maybe bring us back there. When did the idea of something beyond the material start to hit you, and what led you down this path towards Eastern mysticism?
Sure. It was when I joined the military after my undergraduate. I was happy with the technical aspects of my undergraduate education, but I realized that it couldn't explain a lot. Now, I had a lot of biases growing up in Washington, D.C. My family was ostensibly Jewish, but really scientifically materialist. And I had a lot of biases against the Catholic Church, especially. But once I joined the military, I started to ask myself why I was asking my soldiers to risk their life and how I should lead them. But materialism couldn't explain any of those things. Then I found this Zen Buddhist philosopher named Ken Wilber that had some pretty simple rational proofs for spiritual reality existing, like numbers, for example.
And then what?
So Wilber is a Zen Buddhist philosopher. I got into Zen Buddhism after that. And I actually spent 3 months in a Zen Buddhist monastery in upstate New York.
Wow.
Yeah. We would wake up early in the morning to do this really intense prayer service where we would meditate. And then we would do this really intense Japanese chant. We would chant in Sino-Japanese. And some parts of it were nice. I remember meditating on the deck and having deer pass by me.
Yeah.
But Zen, like many of these things, it answered certain questions. I was really happy that I found certain things from it, some partial truths, but then it failed to answer other things. And so then I started to search through other things as well. I searched through pretty much everything cool in secular society, from Jungian psychology to magical shamanism in the jungles of Peru. And then finally, I found this form of yoga called Kashmiri Shaivism that was really influential on me.
So what happened as you went down this path? You know, was it fill you with peace and tranquility? Did you find happiness and fulfillment? What disenchanted you?
At first, I did find some limited happiness and fulfillment. It was kind of like being on a sugar high, in that when I would find answers in some of these partial truths, then I would be happy and fulfilled for a time. But then I would start to feel bad eventually as it failed to answer other questions and other problems started to come up. It was like what St. Augustine describes of being in love with the search for the truth rather than the truth itself.
Yeah.
I was really having a good time flitting between all these truth systems without seriously committing to one, especially because if I did that, then especially one like Christianity, I knew that I would have to accept some moral changes too.
Wow. So when did you become disenchanted?
I started to become disenchanted with yoga when I was studying at Yale. So this was in 2018, and late 2018, early 2019. I had been studying it for a long time. I was studying under one of the best yoga spiritual directors in the United States. He's a really good director who had a lot of depth and could really speak to anyone's spiritual problems very well. But first, I started to realize that there are important beliefs behind yoga that aren't really advertised, but in order to make the practices effective, I needed to believe those things. And actually, the practices predisposed me towards those beliefs. I found myself just kind of adopting certain beliefs about very deep spiritual matters without really thinking about them in a rigorous way. So I needed to change that.
Yeah.
And then I started to realize that a lot of those were, first, a lot are linked to the countercultural revolution. In the modern United States, yoga is is almost indistinguishable from the countercultural revolution. And the influence of that is seen in things like the drug use, the influence from the occult, their attitudes towards language, their attitudes towards marriage and other social constructs. It's very much mixed in with the counterculture revolution in the United States. I went through a brief period where I was very much against that, but more into the traditional yoga. And I read this this professor at Boulder named Christopher Wallace on some of the more traditional yogic beliefs, but I found those very uncompelling. And my search then was starting to lead me towards the Catholic Church.
Wow. Did you enter into any type of spiritual encounters? And for those who are just joining, let me just fill everyone what's going on. We're talking about yoga today, and I know there's been a number of exorcists who've warned about engaging in the practice. I'm not here to scare anyone. I just want to look at where, you know, where it can possibly lead. Everyone who practices yoga doesn't necessarily get possessed, but you know, it's incredibly popular here in this country. And experts in the field, both inside and outside of Hinduism, as well as a lot of these practitioners, you know, say that these physical movements, you know, these postures, if you will, those they're invocations. They're the worship of Eastern deities. And there's something, I don't know, like 330 different gods or goddesses that you're actually worshiping, like the sun god. And, you know, they say that the physical dimension of yoga can't be separated from the spiritual dimension. I know you might be listening right now. I do yoga at the Y, Drew. You know, I do it at the gym, or I do it, you know, in my church, and we're just doing the postures and we're doing deep breathing. I don't do the mantra. Certain yoga exercises, such as the sun salutations, they're clearly religious in their sequence, rhythm, and intent, say experts. And maybe you can speak to this, Frank, because as a yogi yourself who went down this path, you know, a lot of people may not know this. This is a form of worship. Can you separate the two and maybe share with those who are listening some of the things they may be engaged in that they're not aware of?
Sure. So one of the most basic things that I came to realize as I was converting away from yoga is that the names of the poses mean something. For example, one of the most common poses, warrior pose, that's probably the most common pose done in your average yoga class in the West, is called in Sanskrit Virabhadra Asana. Virabhadra is the Hindu warrior god. Now, I'm all about warriors, I was in the army, but we have to be careful over which warriors we imitate. Like, as a US Army officer, I didn't want to imitate Genghis Khan, for example. He was a very bad role model. So I looked up the story behind Virabhadra to see what kind of warrior he was. He was actually created by the main Hindu god, Shiva, because Shiva's wife was very pious, but also erratic and had a troubled relationship with her father. Her father didn't invite her to a religious ceremony, so she killed herself. Shiva got angry at his father-in-law, and he created Virabhadra to go murder his father-in-law. First, Virabhadra sprouts out of the ground near his opponents with his arms in the air. Then he looks down his arms to get his opponent in his sights, and then he lunges at his opponent to decapitate him. That's warrior 1, 2, and 3. So the poses warrior 1, 2, and 3 are actually imitating the sequence of Virabhadra murdering Shiva's father-in-law.
Wow.
Now, when I was planning my wedding, sometimes my in-laws did have some differences of opinion with me, but hiring hitmen to murder in-laws is a pretty serious business. So I decided that that wasn't the kind of war I wanted to imitate. And even just the name yoga itself, in Sanskrit, that name means to yoke or to bind. So that started to make me suspicious, to key me in on some of the beliefs behind yoga. And then the yogis themselves say that you can't separate the poses from the actual practice itself. They say that the purpose of the poses is really to teach you in yogic philosophy so that you can realize your true identity as divine consciousness and then unite yourself to the divine, to the non-dual, the group unity divine that is the true reality of the universe.
Hmm. Well, I know a lot
of you can look at this yourself.
Yeah. I know a lot of people probably disagree with this or thinking, hey, I can use these postures because I'm not aware of it. And they're just motions of the body. And, you know, I'm using a different mantra. I'm saying Jesus as opposed to whatever mantra it is that they often invoke. It's a tough issue for a lot of people. I would caution people not to do it. Let me take a few calls, too. If you want to join us, the number is 888-914-9149, 888-914-9149. Dustin is in Sacramento, California, and he's got a question for you, or at least a comment. Hi, Dustin, you're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hi, Drew. I just wanted to really know that I used to practice yoga, mm-hmm. but I learned the hard way not to, so I've been away from it for like years now. But I was wondering, would it be okay to do Pilates instead?
Well, first of all, tell us your story. Why did you learn the hard way? What happened?
Well, I started having some weird things going around my house, and I somehow figured out how that it was yoga was associated with that. So once I stopped and started and saying my prayers and prayed to Saint Michael, the Archangel, and Saint Joseph, the Tarot Demons, and Saint Benedict.
No, that's great. Dustin, I think, you know, I have no issue with Pilates, and maybe Alexander, you can speak to that. Alexander Frank is our guest today, was a yogi master. He got out of it as well. There's a Christian form of yoga, I think, in Minnesota it originated. Maggie, do you know what that is called?
Soul Core,
I think. So there are alternatives to this rather than doing yoga. I think there are probably other things that somebody can do. But for Alexander, I'll let you respond. I'll let you address Dustin's comments.
Sure. I think that Pilates is fine. It was started about 100 years ago by Mr. Joseph Pilates. His father was a gymnast and his mother was a naturopath. So it comes from those two things rather than from religion. And then the actual form of the practice is not tied with a religion or spirituality. The moral object is called in Catholic theology, or the objective intent of it is not to bind you to a divine like it is with yoga.
All right, let's take another call or two for you. Charlie's in Gallup, New Mexico. He's confused on this conversation. Charlie, hi, go right ahead. You're on the air with Alexander Frank.
Sorry. I'm just kind of confused there because I have a martial arts school. And we do yoga and for concentration and for the ability to the stretch and all this. And we have a Catholic priest. We have pastors that all do this. And I just don't get it where it goes. And it's thought about beyond that to come to a conclusion like that, that it's bad. I just don't get it. Why this priest and these pastors don't see that.
Charlie, thank you. I'm glad you called in and you shared that. I'll tell you what, Alexander, there are a lot of Catholic churches that offer yoga as well. And Charlie, as you heard, is involved in martial arts and they use it. Why is it considered wrong? I know we've already laid out some of those cases, but maybe you can recap a few of those and share your thoughts. How do you handle the objections?
Sure. So I think that one of the biggest reasons is because in modern times, we don't really believe that there's a moral object, the objective nature of an action, whereas that's something that's firmly rooted in Thomas Aquinas, for example. He talks about it in the Summa, in question 20, especially of the Secunda Secunda. And then that's just intuitive for a lot of people. So parents, for example, have to constantly educate their children on the objective value of actions. Their children may say, oh, I'm just doing it for this reason. And you could say as a parent, all right, that's a good reason, but that's still a bad action. That's a good subjective intent, but that's still a bad action objectively. And nowadays, there's a lot of confusion about this where priests even might go into that. I mean, there's a lot of confusion about a lot of things in modern times, and priests have, I mean, some priests as individuals, they're fallible, just like lay people. They sometimes get into some other things that they don't realize are bad at the time. All of us do it. Yoga has been marketed very effectively, but at the end of the day, the moral object of yoga is that it's religious. So to give another example, when my wife has a sore throat, she likes to eat ice cream for the health benefit to her throat.
The health benefit, yeah. I mean the comfort to her throat?
Yeah, exactly. But I wouldn't recommend telling that to any of your children because they're going to then seize on that. Just because it might comfort her throat, it has that temporary benefit and she's intending to do it for good health. It still has a objective quality to it that doesn't make it healthy. Yeah. Even better example is the sign of the cross. So when you do that, if I just scratch my forehead, my chest, and my two shoulders, mm-hmm. that does nothing. Yeah. Whereas if I, as part of a Christian practice, being part of a Christian activity, I do that same thing, then it's the sign of the cross. And that invokes works of grace that go far beyond my own intention. That does a lot more. It's a sign of deeper spiritual work that is invisible to me.
Yeah. 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 My guest today, Alexander Frank, he fell into the world of Eastern mysticism, became a yogi, is now out and is warning others about the dangers of it. There are postures that are offered to 330 million Hindu gods. There's millions of these Hindu gods, and yoga postures really are offerings to God. And if you do the postures, people argue, you do the breathing techniques, there's something to that. You do the meditation. You're asking to be accepted by that God. Do you need willful intent? Do you need to be aware of what you're doing? You know, and I do know that Father Gabriel Amarth, who's recently passed away, he was a renowned exorcist from Rome. He himself, and he performed thousands probably of exorcisms, he expressed concerns about yoga. He pointed out that the practice often, you know, is seen merely as a form of exercise or relaxation, can unwittingly open participants to unwanted spiritual energies. There was another book called Slaying Dragons. It was written by a guy named Charles Fraun, F-R-A-U-N-E. And he supported that assertion, too, by noting that the physical movements in yoga are not just exercises, but they're seen as invocations of Eastern deities. Your thoughts on that? Because I know a lot of people do this, have no idea, whether it's Charlie who's doing it at his karate studio or somebody in the back of their church. Have you spoken to any religious authorities on this, any exorcists? What have you seen? What kind of manifestations have taken place?
Sure. The best religious authority, I cited Thomas Aquinas earlier, yep. but an even better one is scripture with yep. 1 Corinthians 8 and 10. He talks about pagan idol meat. Yep. And this was a controversy in the Corinthian congregation. Some people were still participating in the pagan feasts. Now, if you think about it, a lot of those people probably had good intentions for participating in those pagan meat feasts. That was the only way to get meat for a lot of poor people at the time. Yeah. A lot of them did it just to be seen and to participate in the social life of Corinth at the time. That was the way to mm-hmm. see people, to be seen, to gain social prestige and status. But St. Paul comes down really hard on this and says, you cannot drink the cup of the Lord and the cup of demons when he's talking about pagan idol meat. Wow. By the same token, Christ is so powerful, and there's not like there's no demons hiding out in the meat itself. It's eating the meat in the pagan feasts that are named after a pagan god and whose stated purpose is to honor that god.
My guest today, Alexander Frank. Frank, hold on one quick second. I had to take a break here. When we come back, we can talk more. There is a Vatican document about the New Age. I've spoken to other guests about it in the past. It's called Jesus Christ, the Bearer of the Water of Life. And it explores New Age movement, ancient Egyptian occult practices, and so much of what we're talking about right now. You might want to check that out if you're just listening. But I need to take a short pause. When we come back, we'll take a few more of your calls. I know a lot of people are on hold. We're talking yoga today and whether or not we as Christians should be practicing it. Stay with us. That conversation continues with more right after this.
The Drew Mariani Show. Drew Mariani Show. On Relevant Radio.
Sponsor of the University of Dallas, the Catholic University for Independent Thinkers, invites high school juniors, seniors, and recent graduates to study the great books this summer at UD's two-week-long Arete program while earning 3 hours of college credit. Info at relevantradio.com/UDallas.
So first off, yoga originates with Hinduism, and yoga actually means union. So it comes from the Sanskrit word root, and it means union. So as a Catholic, which Catholic means universal, from an outsider's perspective looking in, they may say, oh, yoga means union. Like, of course, that's good. And that actually leads to the first danger of yoga use for a spiritual practice. So yoga, actually, the first thing is it's monism. And what that is it is essentially this understanding that the universe and God are synonymous, and all of us are dwelling in this overall oneness.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and on the Relevant Radio app.
Yeah, well, thanks for joining me. We're taking a look today at yoga. As I was sharing, I saw an article recently by an exorcist who warned about the practice of it. Now, I'm no expert in yoga. I often held the mindset initially until speaking to some experts like my guest today that, yeah, you could stretch, right? You can use the exercises, just don't invoke these mantras. But we are coming to discover that sometimes these body positions themselves are a form of worship. You know, we live in a strange time today. And I say it to Maggie, I say it to those in my own circle quite often. We live in a time where we rejected God, right? The true God. We rejected Christianity. And we see this statistically, the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S, people who tell surveyors, I have no faith whatsoever. There's a deity, there's a God, but I don't need organized religion. Those numbers are rising, right? The numbers of people going to church are sliding. And when there's a vacuum or a hole, people fill it with something else. I think today we see it with politics. We see it with, you know, so many of these social justice agendas. We see it with Eastern mysticism and other forms of worship, even Satanism and witchcraft, which are on the rise. But there was an interesting stat. The Yoga Journal reported on a survey. It showed that 38.5 million people were practicing yoga in the past 24 months, in 2022. 5% increase from 2016. And the last survey was taken. That's the last time the survey was taken. But if you want to know where those people leaving the church are going, I tend to think they're going in this direction. Over the last decade or so, yoga became a mainstream part of America's fitness routines. We heard from our caller there that, hey, I teach karate, and this is part of the practice. Over the last two decades, because of the pandemic, the demand for yoga equipment skyrocketed. You want to hear an interesting stat? This has gone through the roof. 154%, according to loudcloudhealth.com. So they also reported that 16% of the population, or more than 55 million people, practice yoga in the U.S. So I decided to invite today a man who went down this pathway. He was raised in a Jewish household, became a materialist, ultimately found himself in Eastern mysticism and became a regular practitioner of yoga. He became a yogi and experienced warning signs along the way. They led him to the truth. He actually left, became a Catholic just a few years ago. And he joins us today to answer some of your questions and address some of your concerns regarding this. Is Christianity incompatible with yoga and with your faith. There are people who argue both sides, and Alex Franks joins me today. Alex, it's so good to have you back. Let's jump right into the phones, and we'll before sure. I do, very quickly on that note, clearly there's a rise and practice of yoga. 54% of yoga practitioners, they report that yoga helps them release tension. We just heard the last caller say the same thing. And we see the number of people who are spending money on it. It's going through the roof right now. There's been a 74% growth in popularity. We see this on Instagram and a lot of other platforms. Is yoga the hot thing right now? I mean, it seems to be skyrocketing. Are more people embracing it? And your theory on why?
Yes, it's definitely very hot. I got into it because I had back problems. But if I was going to be honest with myself at the time, I also really liked it. I had back problems from my military service, from walking around in heavy body armor and things like that. And yeah. I actually had early arthritis at the age of 23, 24 in my back. But I started to sense that there was more to it. It was very serious. It had a spirituality to it. And so then I got into the spiritual part, and surveys show that that's a common trend, that people start off in yoga for these benefits of releasing tension, the health benefits, fitness, but then they stay in it for the spiritual side. And I think a big part of that reason is because it matches a lot of these new progressive trends in a better way for them philosophically. It's very subjectivist. It doesn't accept ethical constraints. You know, it's very popular to say I'm spiritual but not religious. And they say, oh, religion is just a set of rules that constrain me from doing what I want to do.
Right.
That's, I think, the reason why it's so popular.
Okay, let's take some calls. A lot of people want to join us. And we'll start in Henderson, Nevada. Tracy used to do yoga. I don't know whether she still does or not. Tracy, good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Oh, good afternoon. And thank you, Alexander, for sharing your testimony. It's really powerful. Well, I got caught up in yoga in college just for fun. That's what everybody did. And the amount of money that's marketed toward this, you know, it's the new health and fitness, and it's going to solve a lot of your mental problems, and you're going to get into great shape while doing it. And I think that's the mindset. And if I think it was years ago, I heard a ex-yogi person, kind of like Alexander, giving their testimony. And when I looked back on my years of doing yoga, what it did for me is I was always a practicing Catholic, but mm-hmm. it starts to make you indifferent,
wow.
lukewarm. And I think that's the real spiritual danger, is like a lot of people think, well, I'm not going to get possessed. Well, the devil doesn't have to possess you. He can just trick you into thinking this is all great. And my husband and I own a sports training center here in Las Vegas. And I can tell you there's plenty of exercise and stretching, and you don't have to go down the yoga route for getting in shape. In fact, there's an Indian priest that I've become friends with, and he's very adamant that you will not find a Christian anywhere in India that would even contemplate doing yoga. They get it. So I think we're really confused here just because of the wow. marketing and the money that's spent to promote this. But anyway, I just wanted to share that and let people know that, you know, you can still own a sports center like my husband and I, and you don't have to get involved in, you know, the yoga aspect wow. of it. There's plenty of things that you can do to promote all the benefits without going down, you know, the roads that can really lead to the loss of a soul. And that's what I had to say. So thank you.
Tracy, thank you for sharing that. Really a powerful call. I'm very grateful for your personal experience there. And Alex, I'll let you respond.
That's great, Tracy. I absolutely agree. Pietra Fitness is one of my favorites. They aim to pray with the whole human person. So they do stretches and alignment exercises that are similar to yoga, but for a completely different purpose. It has a completely different form to it, a completely different intent, and it came from a different source than yoga does. And then you're absolutely right on the commercial aspect. We really do have to call yoga an industry. Nowadays, according to Statista.com, the revenue is in the billions of dollars for a yoga industry, and their marketing is very good. They're very shifty with their use of certain words like religion, conveniently redefining it for the purposes of their marketing. And, you know, when McDonald's says that their hamburgers are really tasty and good and taste good and things like that, then you have to, you know, pause and ask yourself whether that's really accurate marketing, just like with yoga and what people say about it.
All right, we'll move along. Ben is in Minnesota. Ben, thank you for joining us. Good afternoon.
Hey, so I'd like to disagree with what you're saying about yoga.
Yeah, go right ahead. You're on with Alex Frank. Go ahead.
Yeah, so I would like to say that it's the act and the intent behind the act. So if you're doing it in the intent to praise God, it would be just like a pleasure, like sex within marriage. You're doing it to praise God. You're not praising the pleasure itself. See, if you praise the pleasure itself, if you praise sex itself as your end, as your God, it would be like you're using yoga as a way to praise the mysticism and Easternism and all that stuff that takes you further away from God. So, and I know there's like a stigma around like the word yoga. I get it. Maybe we could just call it stretching, but I think just words aside, labels aside, it's mainly the act and the purpose behind the act. And of course it's good to be aware too. I mean, if you're doing yoga and it tends to make you think differently about abortion or anything else, then that would be something to be aware of, and that could be potentially dangerous. But the act of it should be to point towards God as your end, and not the pleasure of, oh, your muscles feel good. Because that's the pleasure, right? But the pleasure is not the end. God is your end.
Yeah. Ben, thank you. Let me let Alex respond. He's got a board full of phone calls. I want to respect everybody's time if I can. You heard his argument. He's looking to disagree there and highlights. He made some equations there. Your thoughts?
Sure. I understand that there's a lot of confusion around these issues. We have to distinguish between the subjective intent that you do an action with and the actual objective intent that's revealed in the actual objective nature of the action. In Catholic theology, scholastic theology, this is called the telic cause. So for example, what about doing something like astrology for the praise of God or crystal magic for the praise of God?
I love it.
Yeah. Your subjective intent is still good, but those actions are objectively ordered. Their objective intent, their objective ordering is to something else. And so the marriage example is pretty good, because if you have physical intimacy outside of marriage, not any physical intimacy, but the kind that you were talking about, if you have deep physical intimacy outside of marriage for the goal of praising God, if you just decide you're doing it for the goal of praising God, then that action is objectively disordered despite your subjective intent. It's the fact that you do it within the marriage form that gives that action, within the marriage context, you could say, that gives that action a different meaning. So if you stretch outside of yoga, it's not a big deal. But if you do it under the yoga umbrella, then that action has a different objective intent to it.
Yeah, I remember hearing from one former practitioner, now an active Christian, and they claim that the goal of all yoga, and here's like the spiritual side of it outside of the stretching, the end goal, and you're a yogi, you know this better than me, is to obtain oneness with the universe. And that's also known as the process of enlightenment or union with Brahman, the Hindus' highest God. And the word yoga means union or to yoke. And I always found the word to yoke very interesting. You know, we're supposed to be yoked to God, to Christ, the one true God, right? And in yoga, I think the mantra people use is what, namaste, is what you say, I bow to the God within you, is what that means. And and people are they make these particular chants and a lot of the yogas classes. Some argue it brings you into a trance-like state so you can join in with the universal mind. That's what this former you know, practitioner had said to me when she was on the air before. And then, of course, we can get into the postures that happen after that. But your thoughts on that? I mean, the end goal of this, you know, the dangers, it might start innocently, but the end goal of this is to be yoked to Brahman, right? To Hindu's highest god. Fill me in the end goal of what yoga is all about. And correct me if I'm wrong.
That's what all the yogas say. For example, Judith Lassiter is probably the most prominent American yoga teacher. And she says that the true essence of the practice is samadhi, the Eastern version of enlightenment, where you unite yourself with the one unified being, a sort of hive mind. Now, the important thing is that the poses are intrinsically linked with that.
Yes.
So if you look on Yoga Journal, which is the most prominent source according to internet traffic, if you just look at the social media accounts and everything, it's by far the most prominent source in the West for yoga news. You'll find some articles on crystal magic and astrology. I use those two examples very deliberately. But you'll also find articles talking about the purpose of the postures. The postures aim to awaken kundalini, which is the yogic spiritual energies, the yoga spiritual energies of the soul associated with Hindu gods, especially that kundalini is depicted as a sleeping serpent goddess at the base of the spine. And then through the postures, you awaken that snake so that it can rise up the spine and become your true identity.
That's wild.
Which sounds like possession.
Yeah, no kidding. And in fact, that's what when I started the program today, I mentioned, I think it was Father Rossetti who has this exorcist diary, and he actually talked about that same practice. And they're seeing a lot of problems with people who've practiced that coming to him for deliverance or for exorcism. I have to take a break, though. I'm up against the clock. Hang out with me if you're on hold. I'm going to do my best to get you on. I appreciate your patience. And if you're just joining us, we're talking well, yoga and its compatibility with our Christian faith with a former yogi master. Our conversation continues right after this.
We go there. The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Hey, if you haven't heard, the next Relevant Radio pilgrimage is being led by Father Rocky. He's going to Poland and Prague this September, and tickets for the trip are almost sold out. You can reserve your spot today at relevantradio.com/Poland. That's relevantradio.com/Poland.
No Catholic has any business dealing in seances or trying to contact the spirits of the dead. No Catholic has any business dealing with Ouija boards, tarot cards, or anything of the kind. Some of these things are associated with the demonic, and some of them have been known to actually introduce the demonic into the lives of the people who get involved in them. Even once, in some cases.
This is the Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Well, thanks for joining me. We are talking yoga today. I know a lot of people practice it. It's on the rise. I was sharing how it's the most talked about thing on Instagram. During the pandemic, sales for yoga equipment are through the roof and people really embracing it. And I've got some theories on why they are doing that. But we're also taking a look at the dark side of the path that can ultimately lead you spiritually. And I've invited today Alexander Frank, who is a former yogi master who practiced yoga, found his way back to the Lord and entered the Catholic Church, to give us some perspective on it. But before I do that, Maggie and I were just talking during the break. Maggie, you lived in Nashville or down in Tennessee for a while, right? You got to share what you're sharing with me during the break.
I did. And I knew a number of yoga instructors. And I just want to give my personal hot take on this.
Yeah, please.
Lovely individuals, especially in the studio. I went to a couple of classes when I lived down there to support these friends that were yoga instructors. Sure. And, you know, while the classes are happening, they're so peaceful and they're, you know, they're telling you to breathe out stress and breathe in peace and this and that. These individuals, their personal lives, I admired nothing about them.
Wow.
They were hot messes. Their lives were so chaotic. They were, you know, any sort of relationship they had was full of infidelity and like all just kinds of weird things going on in their lives that never had explanation. And so I just sort of came to the personal conclusion that maybe yoga wasn't something that I should be involved in because it just seemed kind of false to me that you would be in the studio preaching this peace and you know, no stress, but their lives were riddled with stress and no peace.
Wow. That's an interesting observation. It really is because you think, wow, you know, it's going to help you to detach, center, right? Find that peace that you're longing for. You're going to only find that with Jesus Christ. That's what I'm going to tell anyone who's listening today. Alex, I'll let you follow up on Maggie. Then I want to jump right back into the phones. There's some great calls for you. Did you see that? I mean, is that a common denominator or was that more of an anomaly, the Maggie speaking to?
No, that's very common. So my yoga spiritual director was a great guy in a lot of respects. I think that he's very wise. He could draw from so many different areas and he could apply it to individuals' lives in an amazing way. Like any spiritual problem I had going on, he had a really good explanation and practice. But in his own personal life, for example, first, he couldn't bring himself to commit to his partner. He couldn't bring himself to marry.
Right.
And that's very common, that especially because modern yoga is very mixed up in the countercultural revolution. They're all about bucking these oppressive Christian social constructs like marriage.
Yeah.
And so they end up with a lot of chaos in that area in their life. And then there's also the monetary side that we were talking about earlier. One of my former teachers charges men $1,000 for 2.5 hours of his time in order to teach men to use superior consciousness to seduce women.
Gross.
There you go, Mag.
And I was into that a little bit in that it did enhance my consciousness, but then I could use that to do some nefarious things like to indulge some of these darker desires. And those are, even though there's some ethical constraints early on in the yoga practice, they're called niyamas, those can be safely discarded later on. And then it actually comes to help make your conscious more superior to indulge in those desires, to learn how to manipulate them and strengthen yourself through them. It becomes very occult-like.
Sounds very occult-like. Jim in St. Cloud, Minnesota, thanks for your patience. You're on the air. Go right ahead.
Hey, thank you.
You're welcome.
Looking for some advice. My wife's been practicing yoga, and like you said, she's had a lot of back issues and this and that and the other thing, and it's real popular, and I've been aware of the fact for some time that I don't think it's good.
Yep.
Again, I agree that it's not good, and I've mentioned it a couple times, and she just kind of turns me down, and she's heard it said, too, on a couple of different Christian programs that it's not good, and because I don't believe it. So what's the best way for me to kind of deal with this?
I'll give you my advice, and then, Alex, I'll let you go forward. Just to clarify for everyone, the Catholic Church has not issued an official binding document that explicitly bans yoga. But there are documents that are out there. There's a great document you should read called Jesus Christ, Bearer of the Water of Life, A Christian Reflection on the New Age. It was published by the Pontifical Council for Culture and the Pontifical Council for Interreligious Dialogue back in 2003. And I've had people on it many, many times. You know, the church's position, again, is nuanced. I would suggest to your wife, just in the sake of keeping peace, perhaps alternatives. There are Christian types of, you know, we talked about Pilates. What was the other one you mentioned, Maggie? It was another one that the women use. It says Christian
Soul Core is the Catholic one.
Could be a Catholic
Pietra
one.
Pietra Fitness as well.
Pietra Fitness.
Pietra Fitness.
Let you respond to him as well, because we only have a few minutes left here. What should he tell his wife?
That is a hard situation. And that is one of the strange things about yoga is that people get very attached to it. Like, I really love rugby, but if someone said to me like, oh, rugby is bad for this, if rugby is too brutal, I wouldn't immediately jump on them and be very defensive about it. I'd just say, okay, yeah, that's a fair criticism. But people get very attached to yoga in a way that's not typical for an exercise program. First, pray. God led me to him in some amazing ways. He put together so many different strands of truth into this great tapestry. And then I do have an article on Catholic Answers on this that will help provide some of it. Some personal testimonies, maybe similar to hers, would help. So one of my favorites is from Father Joseph Marie Verlinde. He's Belgian, Father Joseph Marie Verlinde.
Yep.
He went deep into yoga before converting, and he was the chief secretary to his then yoga guru. And when they were touring in Europe, he told his yoga guru that most Westerners practice yoga for relaxation. The guru laughed furiously and then said, "That does not prevent yoga from having its effect."
Wow. Powerful thoughts to perhaps end all. My apologies to everyone else. Our lines are stacked. I will revisit this issue again, I promise, and maybe in the not too distant future, because I know people, a lot of people have questions. Are there resources you would recommend to people who are listening before we run out of time here that can help them better understand the complexity of this?
Sure. Father Ezra Sullivan is a professor at the Angelicum. He just completed a book draft that deals with the more academic side of yoga, and that will be available soon. Pietra Fitness has great material. Right. There's articles on spiritualdirection.com from Father Ezra. And some of my own material is on YouTube and Catholic Answers.
Well, we'll check it out. Hey, Alex, thank you very much for your time and for your witness. And we'll remember you in our prayers. Keep up your good work, okay? Pray for us.
Thank you.
All right, I'm out of time. Until next time, may God bless you.